Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Paul Rodney, attorney registration number 41951, appearing on behalf of the appellant, who is the biological father in the proceeding below, and mindful of Judge Graham's request, I'll refer to my client simply as the biological father or the father, and as appellee as the stepfather, as I'm going through my my argument. This case arises under Colorado's step-parent adoption statute, CRS 19-5203. And in this matter, the district court incorrectly terminated the father's parental rights as to the child, even though in the relevant 12-month period, he had worked diligently to maintain and foster a relationship with the child. And in fact, the facts at the hearing below precluded the finding that he had intended to abandon his daughter. The district court arrived at this erroneous conclusion by committing two levels of error, each of which is an independent ground for reversal here. First, the district court misapplied the relevant legal standard, which this court reviews de novo. Second, the district court reached a conclusion that was not supported by clear and convincing evidence, which is an error that this court reviews under the clearly erroneous standard. Now, in terms of the first error, the misapplication of standard, I think up to a point, the parties agree on the legal standard, and the district court at least recited relevant cases relevant to the legal standard. Under Colorado's step-parent adoption statute, a step-parent with the consent of one biological parent can move simultaneously for termination of the other biological parent's parental rights and also for adoption. That is what happened here. And as relevant here, the proceeding concerned an inquiry regarding abandonment. One of the grounds for terminating the biological parent's rights under the statute is whether the biological parent abandoned the child. The abandonment inquiry focuses on whether in the 12 months prior to the filing of the petition, the parent abandoned the child. The statute does not define the word abandonment. The Colorado Supreme Court and various panels of the courts of appeal have interpreted that statute and have held that the abandonment inquiry focuses whether under the totality of the circumstances, the parent demonstrated the intent during that 12-month period to abandon the child. Abandonment then is a question of intent, and the Supreme Court has repeatedly noted that intent is a question of what one does rather than what one says. And the court has also defined abandonment as the act of leaving a spouse willfully or without an intent to return. So up to that point, the parties agree on the relevant standard. I think the district court presented cases that refer to that standard. But at this point, district court went awry, if you will. It injected an additional element to the standard that is not present under the statute or any of this court's case law interpreting the statute. The relevant window that the district court was supposed to look through to interpret the intent of the father was the 12 months prior to the filing of the petition. The petition was filed on August 22, 2012. Therefore, the relevant window was August 22, 2011 through August 22, 2012. So what did the father do during that one-year window? I won't recite all the facts that are enunciated in the briefs, but just to summarize, in that 12-month period before the petition, the relevant 12-month period, the father initiated a petition for an allocation of parental responsibilities, an APR petition, in the Colorado District Court. As a result of that petition, he was able to negotiate a stipulated parenting plan with the mother and obtain visitation rights to the child. And he exercised those visitation rights. He exercised them in January of 2012, February 2012, and in March of 2012 for a total of at least 12 days. He had phone conversations with her throughout the year. Parties disagree on the exact number of phone conversations, but there's no question in the record that those conversations span the entire course of the relevant year and were somewhere between once or twice a month to a few times more per month. And he gave her birthday gifts and holiday gifts and other incidental gifts along the way. So throughout that year, the father was taking actions within the best of his means from his home in Michigan to maintain and try to grow a relationship with the daughter. The district court itself acknowledged, and I'm quoting page 4 from the order, that there's no question that the father has maintained contact with the child throughout the majority of her life, and certainly through the relevant one-year period to filing. So the district court at least acknowledged that there was contact, but this is where the problem began. The district court, rather than looking at just that one year, cast the analysis as a question of emotional abandonment. Now, emotional abandonment is not the phrasing from the statute. The statute talks about abandonment. So the Supreme Court, the statute does not talk about emotional abandonment. The Supreme Court has never talked about an emotional abandonment, and no court of appeal panel has injected an emotional element into the abandonment standard. But that's what the district court did. And in doing so, it opened the doorway for the district court to take its analysis away from the relevant 12-month period and look at the several years prior to that, from December. The district court was used that as a launching point for talking about a period of time from December 2004, when the child was born, through August 2011, right before the relevant year began. And in doing so, the court completely departed from the relevant time period. Now, we can see this pretty quite clearly in the district court's order. I'm citing page 4 and 5 of the district court order. This is where the court refers to the standard as emotional abandonment. The court sets it up as an inquiry concerning emotional abandonment and immediately proceeds to talk about facts starting with the child's birth moving forward. Now, those facts might be relevant to the inquiry of whether adoption is appropriate, but they're not relevant to the inquiry of what the intent of the father was during the 12-month period. So nonetheless, the district court spent a good portion of the order talking about those facts. Eventually, on page 7 of the order, gets to a very concise paragraph stating some of the actions that the father took. And rather than analyzing those actions and talking about the intent they convey, the district court immediately proceeds to a comparison of the stepfather's relationship with the child on one hand and the father's child relationship on the other hand, and transitions from a very short recitation of what the father actually did during the relevant year into a paragraph that arrives at the conclusion that the stepfather has a more significant relationship with the child. But that's not the standard. The standard of the inquiry under the abandonment statute is not a question of who has a more significant relationship or who has closer ties to the child. The father does not dispute that the stepfather has an extremely close relationship with the child and has been her primary support for many years. That's not the inquiry. The inquiry is, what was the parent's intent during those 12 months?
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel.
Yes.
Such a comparison might be relevant, wouldn't it, to the issue, an issue, if pertinent, of the best interests of the child. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no, Your Honor. It would, in the sense that the best interests of the child are relevant both for the adoption, whether the adoption is in the best interest of the child, and whether the and the abandonment inquiry.
Right.
But the history of the relationship with the father is not relevant to what he intended to do during that.
I understand. But I'm saying that such an analysis could be pertinent to any analysis that a prong of it has a best interest of the child part, right?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay.
The problem here is that the district court framed the argument. The district court early in the order says that the court will discuss both prongs simultaneously, since the best interests of the child are relevant to both prongs. But that I don't think that is not borne out in the course of the analysis. The analysis is, for all analysis such as it is, the recitation of facts, all focuses on the adoption prong, if it will. The history of the relationship from 2004 through 2011 may be relevant, like I said, is relevant, say, to the adoption issue. It does not bear on what import the father's actions had during that 1 year period, however. So as a result of casting the standard as emotional abandonment, the district court was able to get to a conclusion that compared the relationship of the two parents, the step-parent and the biological parent, to the child. That's not the end result. That's not the end target of the analysis, the abandonment analysis. The goal of the analysis is to determine what was the intent. Did the father have an intent to leave the child and not return? And the actions that the father took here are incompatible with that conclusion, which leads me to the second level error, which is the fact that the clear and convincing evidence in this case does not support the conclusion that the district court arrived at, regardless of the misapplication of the legal standard. The record does not support a finding of abandonment, and in fact precludes the finding of abandonment. As I noted, the district court acknowledged that the father was working to maintain contact throughout the year. And the district court, by infusing the emotional element into the standard, was able to downplay the result of those efforts. Now, as I've noted in the briefing, the facts of this case are dramatically different than the reported case law on the abandonment inquiry. There's no reported case where a parent has taken these many actions, has gone to this length to try to maintain a relationship with the child. And the Supreme Court in DPH notes that the abandonment inquiry concerning abandonment, there's no relationship to protect. And the cases consistently note that the child and the parent is a stranger to the child or has no relation to the child. And that is absolutely not the case here. And in fact, all the parties recognize that the father has a relationship with the child. The trial court notes in its order that it hopes that that relationship gets to continue, even though it can't order that after terminating. The court hopes that the relationship will continue. In the hearing, the mother expressed her intention to allow that relationship to continue, and certainly the father wants that relationship to continue. Nonetheless, ironically perhaps, that in spite of wanting that relationship to continue, the district court legally terminated the relationship so that there is no assurance whatsoever that that relationship will continue. This case is a case where, in JAB, for example, the district court found that a father who had been incarcerated for a time and under a court order prevented from seeing the child had initiated an APR petition in the district court. The district court found that there was abandonment. The Court of Appeals reversed, finding that the simple act of filing that APR petition was enough to signify that the parent had no intention of abandoning the child. Now, in the DPH, the Supreme Court noted that the simple act of filing an APR petition is not enough to preclude the finding of abandonment. But in that case, under the totality of the circumstances, it was enough. Here, we have not only an APR petition, we have everything else that goes along with it. We have the effort to obtain visitation. We have exercising visitation rights. We have phone calls going on throughout the year. We have exchanging of gifts. We have an entire set of actions, all geared towards maintaining a relationship and expressing an intent not to return, not to abandon the child, not to leave the child and not return. I think I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal unless you have a question.
All right, Mr. Ryan.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rajesh Kukreja. My registration number is 26137. I represent the stepfather, the appellee, in this action. Your Honors, to begin with, I believe that this case, in large part, works off of a relatively common set of facts. And in fact, the case law that applies, the statute applies, are largely agreed to by both sides as well. What isn't agreed to is what constitutes abandonment, or more importantly, what can constitute abandonment. Now, opposing counsel indicates that the court added on to the concept of abandonment this concept of emotional abandonment. But when we look back at the statute, CRS section 19-5203, it simply says abandonment. It doesn't say physical abandonment or emotional abandonment or further define what abandonment means. It says abandonment. It's left to the trial court to make the determination of what, in those specific circumstances, constitutes abandonment. Those circumstances are different from each individual case, which is why the trial court is left with the authority and the discretion to make a determination of, given these specific facts and circumstances, has one parent showed the intent to abandon the child for the relevant period of time.
Mr. Kukreja, you talk about intent. Regardless of what abandonment may or may not be, isn't that the essential element here, that the trial court had to establish intent?
Yes, the intent to abandon was the essential component that the trial court had to consider.
What evidence is there in that 12-month period of an intent by the biological father to abandon the child.
So put in the context of what the case law provides for, Your Honor, is basically two sides of the equation. The first is the assertion of certain parental rights, which is the right to have contact, to see the child. And the other piece of it, the second part of it, which is the crux of the issue at the trial court level, was the due attention to parental responsibilities, the taking or shouldering on any parental responsibilities for the child. So the evidence essentially was uncontested at the trial court level that the birth father did not take throughout the child's life, but certainly through the 12 months preceding the filing of the termination action, had taken no action to shoulder any of the parental responsibilities. He had not actually acted as a parent to the child. He had merely asserted his rights to be able to have visits with or have phone contact with the child. So that's the key difference. And
as I understood the facts, he lived in Michigan, the child lived here.
That's correct.
Are you asserting that because he doesn't take the child to school or take the child to the doctor's appointments, that somehow means he doesn't meet his responsibilities as a parent?
No, we have to take into consideration the reality of the circumstances that the parties lived in different states.
Well, then what did he do to show that he did not take responsibility as a parent?
And so, Your Honor, I've given that specific question, that specific issue, a lot of thought in preparation for this oral argument. And in lieu of saying here are 20 different things, for example, that he could have done to assert his responsibilities to act as a parent to the child, even from a distance, it's more a matter of what the trial court record showed, which is he didn't do anything. I mean, even the evidence at trial showed that when he was having visits with the child, it was taking her swimming, taking her to Chuck E. Cheese. She got a stomach ache because he fed her the wrong food and then brought her back. The conversations he had with her, even on the telephone, largely centered around, oh, I'm going to come and see you at such and such time. The trial court record indicates that the nature of the contact even was not really parenting in nature, or asking about how she was doing, discussing school. It was a matter of logistics. It was a matter of how are you, when am I going to come see you next, do you want to go swimming, do you want to go to Chuck E. Cheese, and the like. That was the nature of the testimony at the trial court level. So, you know, in the evidence that was adduced at the trial court during the hearing in January 2013 showed a number of different things. So in lieu of actually taking any type of involvement in terms of finding out even what school she went to, talking to her teacher, even from a distance, coming to see her teacher when he was here for visits, talking to the doctor to see how she was doing, talking to the mother about how she was doing. There was none of that. There was nothing involved in terms of establishing more than a sort of visit relationship. The trial court specifically found the nature of the contact between the birth father and the child to be that of a friend or an extended family member, not of a parent. Your Honor, you had a question.
Well, pardon me for interrupting, but if I recall correctly, there was also the motion for rights that was filed within the 12-month period, right?
The APR action was right. Filed within the 12-month period. That's correct.
All right.
In September 2011.
So that at least is some assertion of I want to act as a father, isn't it?
That, as DPH says, that action itself doesn't mean that there isn't abandonment, but the mere filing of that, followed by I want to have a visit or I want to have visits, in and of itself is only the assertion of certain parental rights to have contact with her. It again goes back to the fact that there was no action taken by the birth father to assert any parental responsibilities.
I understand, but in addition to that motion, we do have conduct, and I understand your position on that conduct, but there is conduct. It's not like the motion was the only thing that was filed and then he did nothing else. There was conduct involving him and the child, right?
There was, and there was contact in the form of personal contact and some telephone calls.
And if I may, I'd like to take the next step. While I understand that there may be things in the record suggesting that, as the trial court found, that stepfather has been more involved in the child's life, more promoting of the child's interest than father had. I'd like to address the question of how this record with this conduct by father establishes that father walked away from child?
He didn't walk away physically from the child. Again, this is where we go back to the question of what abandonment is. Is it merely a physical abandonment, or is it abandonment in other manners? And he didn't walk away physically from the child, so there isn't a question about that. Did he ever step forward and provide any emotional support to the child, any parenting to the child? That's what the trial court focused on in terms of, did he ever act as a parent? So contact in and of itself is the assertion of the parental rights, but he did not emotionally ever invest with the child and never had that relationship. And that was essentially undisputed through the trial court record. Your Honors, I believe it's the GD case, 775 Pacific 2nd 90. I'm sure you've seen that in the briefs. The trial court indicated that in that case, father did none of the things that one would expect from a parent who really cared about his child. His apparent interest is in maintaining his status as a parent, not in devoting any time in getting to know his son. That was the GD case. That's not that far off from what we're talking about right now. He maintained his status as a parent. I am her birth father. I want to have contact with her. But then the evidence regarding the contact was not evidence that indicated that there was an intent to actually know her, to do anything other than to take her out for fun activities, bring her back. That's what the trial court showed. That's what the evidence showed at the trial court. Additionally, if you look at the JDK case, there is some language in that case which is of interest, I believe, as well, in that we're talking about this concept of the filing of the petition and then contact. Is that, the question being, is that as a matter of law enough to defeat the abandonment claim? We clearly believe that this is a clearly erroneous standard because the facts and circumstances are up to the trial court, especially when there's conflicting evidence. It's up to the trial court to determine and weigh all of these, and we're looking at this from a clearly erroneous standard. There's some interesting language in the JDK case that says when they're talking about how you look at the time period in determining the intent to abandon, it states, in contrast, when we're talking about as compared to a case of non-support versus a case of abandonment, in the case of abandonment, apparently a parent generally does not have a relationship with the child in an abandonment case. I think in a sense people are working off of that concept of if there is some type of relationship or some type of contact that would defeat abandonment. The interesting thing here is the word generally. A parent generally does not have a relationship with the child in an abandonment case. That suggests that there are circumstances in which the parent would even have some contact or have some type of relationship but could still be considered to have abandoned the child. So at the trial court level, the focus was really on, did this person act as a parent? Did he have contact? No question, he had contact. Was it inconsistent? Yes, it was inconsistent. Did he take an action in terms of filing an action with the district court in order to get additional parental rights? The answer is yes. And then we shift again back to the, did he assume or shoulder any parental responsibilities? We go back to the GD case, which talks about the fact that you have to not just preserve or assert your parental rights, but you also must give due attention to parental responsibilities. And that's where we keep on coming back. The trial court looked at the evidence, heard from everybody, weighed the evidence, and found by clear and convincing evidence that father's actions or inaction was an intent to abandon the child. And as opposing counsel says, from an emotional standpoint, but had an intent to abandon the child, to abandon his parental responsibilities to the child, never to return. In fact, the evidence was clear that he had never acted as a parent to the child. He had never asserted or taken on any of his parental responsibilities to the child. And that is the key for the trial court and what it determined at the trial court level. Because the trial court was tasked with reviewing the conflicting evidence, and we agree there was conflicting evidence. On the one hand, there's some contact, there's a filing of the petition. On the other hand, there's nothing in terms of actually parenting the child. When the court weighs all of that, what did the trial court find by clear and convincing evidence? And the trial court found by clear and convincing evidence that he did intend to abandon the child. There is support in the record for what the birth father did not do. And as a result, there is evidence to support the trial court's ruling that there was an intent to abandon for the relevant time period.
Counsel, it seems to me that your argument comes perilously close to arguing simply that the stepfather is the better father. And as I understand it, it's not a contest for the court to decide which of these men would be the better father. The question is, did the father intend to abandon? Would you address that question and tell me that that isn't what you're arguing and what the trial court did?
We are not arguing that this is a contest in any way. If there was actual parenting by the birth father, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We do have an individual, the stepfather, who did assume the parental role as a father to the child for almost her entire life. So in that context, we look at all of those factors and his relationship with the child, not as a comparison, but in the child's best interest. Is the child's best interest served by continuing that relationship with the stepfather, continuing to be in her care? Would adoption of this child by the stepfather be appropriate for this child in her best interest? So when we're looking at the evidence, talking about the parenting or the relationship that stepfather provided, it is not a comparison to the biological father. It is simply a determination of what's in the child's best interest. Then we go back to the biological father and we assess the abandonment issue. So it's not, although the trial court had that the paragraph to which opposing counsel refers, where she says that she is struck by the difference in terms of how these people know each other, that really deals with the best interest of the child. There are other parts of the trial court's order, and as reflected in the trial court record, that indicate that he simply never took on any of the parental responsibilities. So this is not what did he do compared to stepfather, it's what did he do, period. Did he ever take on any parental responsibilities with regard to the child?
Pardon me, I'm sorry for interrupting you. It seems to me that the argument you just made puts the cart before the horse. Isn't the first issue abandonment, and then and only then, if the court finds based on the evidence that the father has abandoned the child, then isn't the issue, does the issue become best interests?
It's interesting in the context of a contested hearing where you actually have both things that you're trying to determine in one hearing. Yes, the abandonment inquiry is the first inquiry that you have to make. The case law does say that you look at all of the issues in this case through the lens or through the context of what's in the child's best interest. So I think that's pervasive throughout the entire hearing. But you can certainly reverse what I had said, Your Honor, in terms of how we look at the stepfather and his relationship with the child versus the birth father's relationship with the child. Let's look at the birth father's relationship with the child first. Did he take on any parental responsibilities? If not, does that constitute abandonment? The trial court said yes. The trial court then made further findings based on the evidence presented that it was in the child's best interest for the adoption to proceed. She found that the stepfather had essentially acted as the child's father, been his primary been her primary emotional and financial support for almost her entire life. And again, that was uncontested. Birth father even acknowledged the fact that that was the case throughout most of the child's life. And Your Honor, I see that my time is done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kukreja. Mr. Rodney, you have about 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of quick points to conclude. First, we disagree that the evidence was conflicting. We don't think the evidence was conflicting. The only way the evidence could be seen as conflicting is if the standard is taken away from its regular inquiry, which is what was the intent of the parent, and did the parent act upon that intent, to this emotional abandonment inquiry that the district court actually carried out. The appellee states that the contact was not enough and it was a matter of the effectiveness of the parenting time that the father tried to exercise and the success he had at reaching out and trying to be a father. But that's not actually part of the statute, and that's not a way that the Supreme Court has ever interpreted the statute. As Judge Nieto mentioned, this was done under the, we have to look at this case under the totality of the circumstances, as the Supreme Court says. And from 1,200 miles away in the state of Michigan with limited means, father here did everything he could to try to remain in his daughter's life and try to assert his parental rights. He did that. He started this process prior to the relevant year. You know, appellees mentioned what the father did prior to the relevant year, but the effort to get parenting rights began well before here. There was a petition in Michigan that failed because father was not represented by counsel, didn't navigate the procedure properly, filed in the wrong place. But this was a part of an ongoing effort to assert parental rights. And within the year that we're talking about, he did what he could to maintain a relationship from afar. Now, granted, he did not have the level of fluency in the daily details of the child's life that one might have wanted. Father acknowledged that he wants the relationship to be closer and to develop more, but he did the best he could from afar to show that he had no intention of leaving the child. That's why we believe this case should be reversed, that the evidence is not conflicting, and that the finding of the trial court is incompatible with the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodney. Thank you again, Mr. Kukreja. These matters are rarely orally argued. We're happy to see that counsel placed a high degree of priority and importance on this important case. Your arguments were excellent and helpful to us. And you can be assured we will give this our utmost consideration. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.